good night to you. I guess we've done past evening. I think that was a while ago. I thought I was going to have to set my alarm there for a little bit as we was waiting for Brandy and Josh and everybody to get in, and kept getting darker and kept getting darker. I was like, my goodness. What time do you guys go to bed? I'm usually go to bed pretty early. I'd say about 9:30, and I was like, my goodness, we're cutting close into it, you know, especially with the time change. It's been a little bit different, but it sure is good to see you tonight, and good to see you smile, and just really excited about the message and just kind of how the Lord's leading. As you go through some of these books, this is actually the smallest book I believe you'll find in the New Testament. And sometimes when you're looking for doctrine, sometimes there's a lot of golden nuggets, it seems like, in there, and sometimes it's more straightforward. And this is kind of seemingly one of those straightforward type of books, and it seems like it's, again, kind of repetition, saying a lot of the same things over and over about loving your brother, about loving truth. And that is, to me, should be very generic. It seems very generic, like you would say that, and like, yeah, I know I need to love my brother. Yes, I know I need to love the truth, but why is it saying it so much over and over and over? I think there's because it's a reminder that needs to take place. What we might take for granted in this day and time might be harder to find at a later date and time. As you're looking at how the New Testament is winding down, you get into John to Jude, and you look at some of these chapters right before Revelation, you're seeing a transition in dispensation. Just like if you go back to the book of Acts and you see how you're transitioning from the law into grace, the Gospels, and you see how that transitions into the church age, that's a different time. The Old Testament saints and the patriarchs, they would not understand what we are doing here tonight. This would be foreign to them. And so as we see this and we see these reminders, I think it's a reminder to us because we need to be reminded. If you go back or during the time period that this is, I think, actually talking to when you talk about dispensations, if you think back to the beginning, there was a lot of churches that took place, Brother Norman, or a lot of church that took place in homes. That's kind of how it started. People met at different places. So you were probably having smaller groups of people that might be spread out a little bit more. And as people are spread out more and as people are not maybe congregating together more, it would be easier sometimes to be maybe out of sight, out of mind. And being able to remind people to be together and to love your brother and to stay close to them and not forget about that. And so as I was studying and I was seeing some of those things come together, I just prayed. I said, Lord, why? Why is this saying the same thing over and over? But if, again, we'll be in the second epistle of John there, the second book of John, little John. But I want to read Matthew chapter number 24. I want to read a few verses here to get our minds somewhat, I believe, setting the stage for the time period that John is talking about. You know, John gets us ready for the revelation. He's talking about those things that are revealed there. And when you see Matthew chapter 24, you're talking about a time period just before, just during, just after the tribulation period. What that is going to be like. So if you ever want to talk to someone, or you see, probably see this quoted a lot when you see anything in the news regarding the tribulation or end times, you probably will see people quote Matthew chapter 24 quite often. But Matthew 24 and verse 4, and this again is talking about the signs of the ends of the age, what it's going to look like. And Jesus answered and said unto them, take heed that no man deceive you. There's a lot of that going on. And I'll say this quickly, just as I was kind of thinking about it now. I think there's such a push for people to keep people in church or to entice people into church that people are doing things maybe that they didn't normally used to do. And I'm talking about even here locally. You know, you can look at, and I've had people ask me, you know, did a lot of people quit going? Are people still coming? How's the church going? I was like, the church is fine. Numbers are fine. People see numbers. They take numbers as a meaning of, if there's a lot in number, then that's good. If there's less in number, then that's bad. But I want us to know tonight what is most important. The mark of a true church is their love of the truth. That's the mark of a true church. There's a lot of numbers. You can see a lot of numbers down the road, but that doesn't mean that it's a true church. And I want us to remember that it's the quality of what we have versus the quantity. Now, I want everybody to be here that can be here, to hear the truth. That's what it's about. I mean, I don't think anybody would argue that, but if we start compromising to truth to get the truth to get people in, then we've completely missed it. And I say that because locally, I can take you to places that if you ask them what their church covenant is or what their faith is, what they believe in, their line is pretty much everything, anything. Just whatever you want to do, you do it. If you want to talk in tongues, have at it. If you want to do this, have at it. You believe in water baptism and salvation, have at it. Just whatever you want to do, do it. But see, the truth is compromised. And it's watered down, and it doesn't mean so people come in. I don't know how you could even worship in a place like that, not in spirit and in truth. So that's something very real. It's saying here, take heed that no man deceive you. You know, it's really warm and inviting and inclusive when you start thinking about everybody just gathering together, but doctrine matters. What the Bible teaches matters. That's what separates the truth from being deceived. And that's why it's important that it says again in Jesus answering and said unto them, take heed that no man deceive you. He's saying, slow down and let's remember what the truth is, that you're not deceived. For many shall come in my name saying, I'm Christ, and I shall deceive many. And you shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that ye be not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. You see, we are hearing these things, we're seeing these things. We had a blood moon earlier this week. We've got a hurricane coming tomorrow, the end of the week. So, I mean, you're seeing all these events. You've seen these things that take place, and it catches people's attention, and you see that. For all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. So the time is not just yet. These are things that will be seen, and this is actually even making reference to the second coming of the Lord Jesus Christ after the tribulation period. There's different time periods here. It's all happening very close together. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in diverse places. All of these are the beginning of sorrows. All of these, that's the beginning of the tribulation period and what it's going to look like. Then shall they deliver you to be afflicted, and shall kill you, and ye shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. You see, there is a bitter time coming, a cold time that's coming. And when you start seeing these things here now, it kind of makes sense why John is saying, love your brother, love your brother, love the truth, stay with the truth, don't be deceived. He's saying these things over and over. It's not as dark or as cold as it may seem now, there's a darker, colder time coming. I don't say that to be negative tonight, but I'm just saying that to be honest. In verse number 10, it says, And then shall many be offended, and shall betray one another, and shall hate one another, and many false prophets shall rise, and shall deceive many. And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. See, that's a very deceptive time. If you got to a point in your life, a place in your life that you didn't trust anybody, it would be hard to love anybody. It would be hard to kind of extend that forbearance. If you're feeling like somebody is taking advantage of you, it's hard to be warm-hearted toward them. It's hard to just be open about that. Now, and I was just thinking about another current event. If you think about the election yesterday, and I'm sure you could probably look back and find it, but have you seen a more divided type of election than what we noticed yesterday? I mean, you think about some of our elections. We had, 40-some thousand in the county, and I think maybe 20, 22,000 voted in one election, all the way down just to 44 votes. That's amazing to me when you're talking about that many people. You think maybe the spread would be much wider than that, but that's talking about how divided things are. I mean, it's just one way this, one way that. Each way, you see how that division is, and that's very hard on the community. That's very hard on the nation. It's a very hard situation to be in.
But again, it says, because iniquity shall abound, there's so much iniquity, there's so much trouble, there's so much unrest, there's so much untrust in everything that's going on, that the love of many shall wax cold. People will get tired of caring. People say, I'm done. Now you think about the work of the church. Has it ever changed? Does our mission, Brother Dale, has our mission ever changed, the mission of the church? Or has it always been the same? Jesus Christ came to die for sinners. We are to share that gospel, Sister Sharon. We're supposed to share it with people. Are we supposed to ever stop sharing it? Are we supposed to ever kind of become recluse and kind of withholding within ourselves and stop caring? Or are we always supposed to give? I'll give you a good analogy. I was trying to think of something witty to give to you. If you look at it like maybe lifting weights. You know, if you're fully healthy and there's nothing bothering you, there's nothing, you have no ailments or anything, and let's say you can lift 50 pounds, and that's not a problem for you to do. So you lift that. That's the standard. That's what's expected of you. So you lift that. That's no problem. What if one day you injure your arm and now you can't lift? It's harder. You're kind of struggling a little bit more. But did the weight change? The weight didn't change. The responsibility didn't change. You changed. You're not as capable as you once were able to be. And I'll say it like this. What's heavier? 50 pounds of feathers or 50 pounds of bricks? What's heavier? Huh? Good. You see? A lot of people say 50 pounds of bricks, you know. But it's the same. The responsibility of the church is the same. But do you think it's easier today than it was 20 years ago? Does it feel harder? Does it feel colder? Does it feel different? I'll ask you that. Does it feel different? It seems like, and I've heard Preacher Carl say it like this. He said, used to, you could get up and preach a little bit and the service would break out. It don't feel like that anymore. It doesn't. Even attending other churches, services, and things like that, it just don't seem to happen like that anymore. Why? Is the responsibility of the church gotten more? It's the same. Or has people changed? Has times changed? You see, and I think that's why, Brother Tim, there's that reminder, don't forget to love your neighbor. Don't forget to love each other. The responsibility is the same. And so what we'll see here, we'll get right into it tonight. 2 John, I'll try to hurry along because I know our bedtime is quickly approaching here. Some past, maybe. But I like the way this is written here. I don't see it written directly to a certain church, although it does make reference that they believe John was at Ephesus during this time as he was writing this. Again, the shortest book in the New Testament, 2 John. But he's saying here, the elder unto the elect lady and her children, whom I love in the truth, and not I only, but also all they that have known the truth. It's talking about staying with the truth. It's talking about the true church. I don't see a name given here, and there could be different theories as to who it's being written to. I kind of look at it as an elder writing into the church. I know a lot of times the church is referred to as a lady or a female. It's kind of referred to as that. I'm talking about her children. I believe that is making reference to the congregation, to the people within the church. He's talking about how John is talking about how he loves the truth and he loves the church, and this is to be an encouragement to continue walking in the truth, even during a bitter or hard time. Not to give way to something else, but to stay in the truth. What more important thing is there to do than just to stay in the truth? When you see as much division as you can see people wanting to have maybe fellowship, if you want to use that term, or maybe just not fighting, that people get to a place that, well, let's just compromise and get to the point where we're all just getting along. And you know, it just doesn't work that way when you're talking about the doctrine of the Bible. It has to stay the same. You and I try to change it for our own purpose, or somebody else try to change it for keeping the peace. That doesn't change what the gospel is. It makes us, puts us in harm's way of being a heretic or being in heresy. And we can't do that, but you see it happen quite often. And he's saying here in verse number 2, for the truth's sake. Remember what we're doing and what we're about. It says here, for the truth's sake, which dwelleth in us, and shall be with us forever. Remember the cause. Remember what we're talking about here. For the truth's sake, just to stay with the truth. Grace be with you, mercy and peace from God the Father and from the Lord Jesus Christ, the Son of the Father, in truth, in love. He's giving who the Godhead is. He's giving who the Trinity is. There's a lot of people, when you start talking about intermingling faiths or beliefs, and you start talking about the ecumenical movement, or you're talking about charismatic movement, it's kind of just, let's just put everything in all together. And you see, what John is saying here, this is the Godhead, this is the Trinity, this is who our salvation revolves around, nobody else. It's not about any other religion, it's not about a false religion. This is exactly what it's about, in truth and in love. And you see the way it's written here, it's very reminiscent of what you would see the way Paul would have written it. You see how it's consistent with New Testament doctrine from Paul, from John, from Peter. You see how they come together. Now, we also see a good report here in verse number 4 that he's rejoicing in the children walking over the truth. He said, I rejoice greatly that I found of thy children walking in truth as we have received a commandment from the Father. He's saying, you're staying with the truth. You're staying with the word. You know, talking about the King James Bible in this day and time, people will argue over that. People will fight you over that. But if you ever slow down and study the difference between the other, if you want to call them versions, and what's missing in those versions, you'll see why they're not bona fide. You'll see why they're not real. It attacks the Trinity. It attacks the blood. There's complete missing verses that you'll see, and there's a whole reason. That's the reason why we're to stay away from those things. He's saying that you're staying with the truth. You imagine how hard that's going to be as the world gets colder and colder and colder. People get more divided about things. People start compromising. People start giving in. People start saying, I'm tired of the fight. I'm tired of life in general. I'm tired of trying to keep up with it. You know, it's a blessing to see this many people here on a Wednesday night. A lot of people don't see the need. That's the first step in falling away, the not seeing a need. Not wanting to be here, not seeing the purpose. If you want to get cold, start missing church and you'll get cold, I promise. A lot colder than it feels outside tonight. It doesn't take long. Take any devout Christian that you admire and take them outside of church and just see how fast it is until their life's in a mess. It's that simple. It's important that we stay with them. That's what he's saying here. He's talking to this church and he's encouraging the church, but also giving some praise. I rejoice greatly that I found of thy children, the congregation, walking in truth as we have received a commandment from the Father. Now we see here in verse number 5, see these reminders again. It says, and now I beseech thee, lady, not as though I wrote a new commandment. I'm not writing anything new unto you, unto thee, but that which we had from the beginning, that we love one another. Again, just reminding us to love one another, to be compassionate toward one another, not letting things like politics take that away, not let current events, things in the news, vaccines, should have this, should have that. You look at all the things that have divided people right here in this community. This applies to us today. He's saying, remember what the truth is. Let's, instead of being surrounded by all these other things that are going on in the world, let's stay centered around Christ, and let's stay centered around the truth and what the love of the gospel is. Let's stay centered around that and stay unified. That's what he's saying here. Because you think about how it would have been and if our church was divided out into little house churches and we didn't see each other on a regular basis, it would be easy to fall out of touch with people. And he's reminding us here to stay in touch, to love one another, that we love one another. Verse number 6, and it says here, and this is love, that we walk after his commandments. This is the commandment, as we have heard from the beginning, and ye should walk in it. It's an encouragement just to stay walking in the truth. Just stay in it. Just stay faithful. That sounds easy when you say that, but as life gets harder, we say this, just keep lifting that 50 pounds while I'm trying. But my arm's in a sling now, and I can't quite lift it like I used to. It's still the same responsibility. You know, life has a way of wearing things down. Miss Judy was talking about that. It was amazing. I mean, as you were talking about that tonight, I was thinking about this very verse here. You know, you think the Christian walk would get easier as you get older. But if you're not careful, we can get colder as we get older. There's a certain thing, and I've seen it. I've seen it with a lot of people, and said it seen this way. A lot of people, as they get older, they get more set in their ways. Maybe get more stubborn, you know, something like that. As long as you're staying in the right way with the Lord and you're staying with Him, that's a good thing. But what if you're getting in your own way? That's a bad place to be. Make you cold. You think, my goodness, I thought this is supposed to get easier as we grow. I thought we're supposed to get stronger as we grow, not harder. But then I've seen a lot of older people really struggling, having a hard time with things. You think, my goodness. But these bodies, they might not be able to withstand what they used to. It takes effort. It takes focus. Would you not agree? You know, sometimes they say as a younger person, you can bounce back quicker from an injury or something like that. You heal quicker. Little babies, you know, if they fall down, it scares you to death, but they kind of bounce right back. If I fall down, I got to lay down and take inventory for just a few minutes, Miss Judy. I got to make sure all that's there. Let's just think about this a minute. You know? So that tells me it doesn't necessarily just get easier. But we got to slow down and remember these things and think about each other and stay within, stay in it. Stay in here, walk in it again. And this is love, that we walk after His commandments. This is the commandment that as ye have heard from the beginning, ye should walk in. And He's saying, just stay faithful. Slow down and remember these things that you've learned, that the Lord has learned and taught us. Stay in the truth. Don't get so caught up in numbers or get caught up in things that we start getting away from what the truth is. I see that a whole lot. It would be easy to try to be a comedian and make people laugh. It would be easy to try to say, I want to see everybody happy. I want to see these pews full. And what could I do to make these pews full all the time? What if we would just do this? If we would just do that? If we did things just a little different? Well, like we've said, the truth doesn't change. What would the church actually be producing if it's not producing the truth? I think it's more of a hindrance. You see here, we'll see what it's talking about here in verse number 7. Lead right into it. It says, for many deceivers are entered into the world who confess not that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh. This is a deceiver and an antichrist. There's a lot of that goes on. I know churches that have branched out of Baptist churches in this county that is not following the truth in any form of the imagination. You know, you think about it. It's, you know, you think something moving in from somewhere else, coming in, a strange doctrine or something like that, it'd be easy to look at it that way. I'm talking about things right here that goes on. People trying to bring things in, and if this is what's going to fill the pews, then that's what we'll do. We'll have us a coffee bar out back, and whatever you want to do, however you want to dress, however you want to act, whatever you want to do, we'll just freely do that. And then doctrine is gone. I went to a seminar one time here in this county, and I heard a man stand up, and he was talking about the Bible. He was talking about, I don't think he was a King James person, but he said, we need to quit arguing over all this doctrine stuff and just get along. What does Amos 3:3 say? How can two walk together unless they be agreed? What do you mean this doctrine stuff? Like it don't matter. What is there to talk about if the standard is lost? How are you going to win lost people to the Lord if you're promoting all kinds of every different kind of ways? There's only one way. How are we going to do this? There's many deceivers. People that come in and they have different ways of doing things. They're more concerned about, I've seen it happen like this. I've talked to people who want to start a church. That's a dangerous thing, saying I want to start a church. They start looking for Pell Grants. They start looking for grants, start looking for money. I'm going to get a loan and I'm going to start a church. And all they're doing is starting a business. Now, I know there's church business, Brother James, in the church, and there's church business that goes on, but there's people who look at the church as just a business. I'm going to start one. See, he's going to come. Try to, and then that's where it kind of turns into a money racket, and then people get all tore up and try to keep the business going, and that's when it's not even a church at all. It messes with people. It messes with their doctrine. It just, this preacher says this, or this preacher says that, but he's not even in the Bible. It's a business. It's deceiving. And it does so much harm to people. They're trying to learn and try to understand, just because it says church on the sign doesn't mean it's a church. There's a lot of deception that goes on. Again, it says, verse number 7, it says, "For many deceivers are entered into the world who confess not that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh. This is a deceiver and an antichrist." Now look at verse number 8 here. It says, "Look to yourselves, that we lose not those things which we have wrought, but that we receive a full reward." The word wrought, that means formed with work or labor. It's not talking about anything kind of vain labor, but it's talking about standing for the truth. But it says here, "Look to yourselves." I think a lot of times, and I look at it this way, I was thinking about it on the way here tonight, a lot of times we might look at the preacher or expect the preaching to do everything, but you know, a big part of this is the congregation's participation. How much are you willing to put into it? How much are you willing to invest of yourself? It's saying here, look to yourselves. That's talking about self-accountability. You know, I hated missing so bad when we were out sick, and Brandy, we were talking about it. She said, "Well, you know, it's different when it's the preacher that's sick." I'm like, that's true. You know, it's you want things to go on, and you want the church to, you know, people to don't feel like you can't go because I'm not here. But well, if the preacher's not there to preach, what are you going to do? Many times I looked at it as a member, just it's like this: when I was just a member, I could come and go and it didn't matter, right? Well, that's wrong. Every member here, when they're not here, is missed. Your participation, your involvement, your prayer, what you input into the service is absolutely crucial. You know, it just so happens most of the time when people aren't able to come here, other people are. But what if everybody wasn't able to be here? And nobody would be here tonight. It's a blessing to see you here on a Wednesday night. That's getting harder and harder and harder. I mean, that's just the truth. But you come looking, you come seeking what the Lord has for you, I promise you, He'll bless you. He'll make it worth your time. He'll make it worth it. We're here to see Him. Look to yourselves, your participation, what you do, what your involvement is. Look to yourselves that we lose not those things which we have wrought, what we've worked for, but we receive a full reward. I would hate to earn a reward and to lose it. I would hate to earn an opportunity, and we're not talking about salvation, we're talking about rewards. And there are rewards. We've talked about those before. There's crowns. The Lord lets us have things that we can give back to Him. That's a gracious God. Knowing who we are, what we have to offer, what we can't give back. But He says, you know what, if you'll do these things, there's about five things He mentions. If you'll do these things, I'll give you rewards. And then you can have something to cast at my feet. That's a gracious God. That He would allow us to take that much part in what He did. We're not worthy. It's what He did. And I would hate to earn a reward and lose it. I've thought a lot about that. What if Jason was faithful for 20 years and stopped? Boy, I'd hate to lose that opportunity. I want to see what it's like. I heard this today in some commentary. I was listening to a preacher was talking, and he was kind of making reference, and I don't have the scripture, but he was saying, what if our faithfulness on this earth and what we give to the Lord in this life equals our closeness to Him in the afterlife? How we serve with Him, how we reign with Him in the afterlife. And I thought that was a very interesting thought. So that's something we will never see this side of eternity. That's what He has waiting for us on the other side. But it's our faithfulness, staying faithful and staying in there for Him, that we receive that full reward. Verse number 9, it says, "Whosoever transgresseth and abideth not in the doctrine of Christ hath not Christ. He that abideth in the doctrine of Christ hath both the Father and the Son. Again, just staying in the truth. Some, you can tell some people get in, some people get out, some people will stay in it and they stay faithful. It's measured for a lifetime. Verse number 10, if there come any unto you and bring not this doctrine, receive him not into your house, neither bid him Godspeed. He's saying that Godspeed, I'll look that up, and you know what that means, but that means good wishes to a person that's on a journey. You're not even supposed to wish them a good journey. Not even supposed to help them. That seems pretty stern, doesn't it? But I'd hate to have a hand in misleading somebody. I'd hate to have a hand in telling somebody something wrong. And I want to say this tonight, and I think this is probably hard for most people. Not all people. Some people are good at it. But this is hard for most people. Saying no. You ever thought about that? I think a person most often will try to find any way to not say no, to appear to be nice, than just to say no. I see it a lot. A lot of times people want to be accommodating. A lot of times people don't want to be confrontational. And they'll do anything they can to keep from saying no to somebody. The Bible is very clear and very plain in what it's saying right here. He's telling us, you tell them no. If they're not giving the gospel, they're not telling it like it's supposed to be. If there come any unto you and bring not this doctrine, what we're talking about here, God the Father, the Son, the Holy Ghost, and Jesus has come in the flesh and died for our sin. If anybody come in saying any other thing and bring not this doctrine, receive him not into your house and neither bid him Godspeed. He said, just shut him off right there and send him down the road. How many of us are willing to do that? I mean, that's what the Bible is telling us to do. For he that biddeth him Godspeed is a partaker in his evil deeds, of his evil deeds, joining in what is not right. In verse number 12, it says, having many things to write unto you, I would not write with paper and ink, but I trust to come unto you and speak face to face, that our joy may be full. There's some things that's just not. It's better to tell somebody face to face, Brother Norman, than to write it down. Have you ever started to write a text and just say, no, I just need to tell this person this? That's what I thought about. This is just too much to text. This is just too much. I just need to tell you face to face. And that's kind of how I see that. He's coming for a visit and he's excited to see them because this church is staying faithful. They're walking in the truth, and he is ready to meet up with them and to encourage them that their joy may be full face to face. And I'll close with this here in verse number 13, again, just talking about their fellowship. The children of thy elect sister greet thee. And he's just talking about the fellowship that they have. And I find it interesting that it's not necessarily directed to a certain church, but I take it as it's being directed to all churches, the church. The true church, those that are staying faithful. As you see things happening as time goes on, and I think you can see it getting colder and colder, a lot less forbearance with people. But this is a reminder. Stay, number one, stay with the love of the truth. And number two, love your brother and sister. Encourage them and help them and be there for them. And don't forget them. Don't let it be out of sight, out of mind. And I thought that was some very good teaching there. Tonight, very good encouragement. Seeing the commandments, to not forget these commandments over and over, it mentions that. But as these times get colder, I think people need to be reminded more often. Be easier to fall out of love with people than what you think. It's easy to get offended. This day and time, everybody gets offended and stays offended and stays mad. And it's easy to fall out of love. And without love, you're not going to share the gospel like we're not going to share like we're supposed to. And so I think that's a good reminder for us there. I'll close with that tonight. And I appreciate your good attention. And we'll definitely have a time of prayer.